Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dozy, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Right now, if I look back at the fundamentals of consumers over the years, the underlying requirements haven't really shifted. It's still all about how consumers want to manage their money, protect their money, and grow their money. What has changed, however, is how these needs are met, particularly by the speed of disruption and adoption of tech. Having spoken to FinTech leaders during the course of this year, I sense a real shift and leap to the new financial ecosystem, whether that being the crypto, subscription, or lending space. And at the heart of this movement is our customers, our people and talent, and our innovative tech solutions. So I welcome you to today's panel discussion on the future of FinTech in 2021. And to discuss the topic with me, I have FinTech thought leaders from across Europe. I've got Cyrus Fazel, founder and CEO of Swissborg, Johannes Kals, co-founder and COO of Mina Technologies, and Helver Lander, CEO of Aprila Bank. Welcome to the show, guys. I'm really looking forward to a great discussion today. And to kick off the discussion, maybe I can turn to yourself, Cyrus, and ask your view on how you have seen the fintech world evolve during 2020.
In terms of fintech, I would say all the digital is that until 2020, we didn't have to get to be like fully digital, right? We were still able to process payments and, you know, cash. We were still able to do meetings in face-to-face. And I think so 2020 has been really the era where we got to be digital. And we endorsed it in even a better way with fintech. The last thing to get digital is always the money part, because it's something that people are usually not afraid about, you know, going paying online and trading online or doing things like that. And I think so 2020 was extremely interesting, especially from the point of view of crypto adoption. It's been really the year where everyone is like, okay, you know, in 2019, 2018, if a bank was talking about crypto, it was like, or blockchain in general, it was like, okay, we're trying to do like a cool, you know, a mock, and hopefully, you know, this will be cool for our digital innovative lab. 2020 is like, okay, now everyone is getting into it. And 2021 is like, okay, if we're not getting into it, we're probably gonna get fired or lose, you know, our clients or lose our user base. And since the drop of the dollar and everyone realizing that maybe at the end, this Bitcoin thing is maybe better than just, you know, speculative asset. It could maybe a new way of like, I think so, a great inflation hedge. I think so a lot of big investors, smart investors got into crypto. I think so a lot of big fintechs such as PayPal and others has got into crypto as well. And yeah, it's fascinating to see that, you know, this space is really at its early start, but has grown from 30 million users 2 years ago to over 150 million users as of today. So that's being, I think so crazy ride, I would say, that this new confinement 2020 brought to at least the crypto space within the fintech.
Well, then, yeah, moving on to Johannes, from a subscription perspective, how have you seen sort of the fintech world evolve during the course of 2020?
Yeah, I think what we see is similar to what's already been said, that 2019 and before was a lot about, okay, digital engagement, and it's important to drive innovation in the banks and in the finance space. And since we are totally focused on the retail banks, we see that these banks, they were talking a lot about the neobanks entrance and building these great customer journeys, etc. And 2020 has been, especially now after COVID, it's been much more like, okay, what did all of that innovation really gave us? What did we win by that? We are still not as good on engagement and digital user journeys as the neobanks, and we have spent a lot of money on this. So the theme of 2020 have really been, okay, how are we going to make revenue from this? Because the utmost mission for us is, of course, to bring some kind of revenue from this kind of personal finance management. And I think what made Minna very unique in this situation is that we never spoke about engagement as our number one thing. We have always said that actions are more valuable than insights. So we are providing actions to the bank customers, and our actions in the subscription management space will also generate revenue. So actually, I think 2020 for Minna has been greater than ever before in terms of our positioning, because it's in the end about hard dollars, so to speak.
Yeah. And Pavel, just to bring you into the conversation from a micro lender perspective, how has 2020 evolved for you guys?
Well, I mean, our big concern, obviously, at the onset of the pandemic was that we would see huge bankruptcy rates. So we reduced our credit limits and credit exposures quite a lot. But the really surprising thing to see now is that these small businesses, which are the majority of all businesses, are actually doing surprisingly well during the pandemic, quite in contrast to what actually the media is proclaiming at any given day. They are doing well. They have managed to turn around, find digital solutions, move to e-commerce if they didn't already have it, started collaborating from their home offices if they weren't already doing that from before. So it's been really impressive to see the resilience among small businesses. And we have now fully opened up our credit limits again because we see that there is actually no signs of increased bankruptcy rates. It's on the contrary. And the growth is back again, despite the fact that pandemic is still raging. The other thing that, from our point of view, we have seen in the fintech space is that over the last years, there's been a lot of new, really, really great apps and neobanks and new offerings. But it has become quite confusing for the customers, for the users, for the consumers, because there are so many available apps and online solutions now that it's easy to get lost. And most solutions only solve a set of very specific problems. And this has been aggravated by the pandemic because now everyone has to do almost everything digitally. And people are definitely working, at least from our perspective, working more intensively than ever. And any kind of friction or confusion moving between different services is adding to complexity and effort. So what we have seen in 2020 is the emergence of embedded finance, basically making financial services, banking services, payment services available inside the systems that businesses and consumers are already using. So instead of having to go to a dedicated banking app to deal with your transactions or your lending, credit services, for instance, or prepayment of invoices are now being made available inside the invoicing systems and accounting systems. And I think that's a big trend that will grow strong, even stronger going forward.
No, thanks, guys, for wrapping up 2020 from your perspective. And Jonas, I mean, as you start looking back at 2020, what do you think are the key lessons learned that will help you as a business, you know, move forward into the new year? What things are you going to pick up and really focus on and drive out next year?
Yeah, I think one of the key lessons here is that we have learned that our customer, retail bank, they are probably rethinking what a retail bank are doing, what they are doing. And they think broader in general. So it's not just money management. It's also about helping the customer with their life goals. And if that is a B2B setting, I'm sure other participants can answer that better. But in a B2C setting, it's, for example, thinking a bit broader about what is the life goal of this person. So what we have seen on the websites of the banks is more ads or marketing campaigns targeted towards life situations. So for example, are you getting married? Here is the checklist. And we help you not just with, savings account for the actual wedding, but also everything else you need to think about. Same thing with getting kids and buying a house. etc. But I think in the theme is that banks are thinking broader. So it's not just those kind of big life events. It can also be, I want this outcome, this goal in my life. I want to lose weight, for example. Then I think there's where we see a match with our products and our product thinking that, like, okay, let's be obsessed about one bank customer's outcome, so to speak, what they want to do here. They want to lose weight, and what is the bank's role in that? And that is where the banks are starting to talk about apps or marketplace, like adding additional functionality into the core banking products. And of course, then subscription switching or discovering new subscriptions to help you achieve your life goals is one of the takes, but there are several ones. And I think that's very interesting. What the banks is becoming, perhaps more of a mega app, so to speak, where you do a lot more things than just managing money.
Sorry, just to bring you into the conversation, I know you guys over at Swissborg have really taken time to develop out your community and really understand your customers' needs and wants. How's this played out over the course of 2020 as customers get more knowledge, they get more sophisticated? So what's the insights as to how that's played out from a Swissborg perspective?
We really have two different apps right now. Actually, we have three, but let's talk about these just two. We have a fun game where people could just say Bitcoin is going up or down on a daily basis. And it's a competition, people win points, and it's very educative. So for all the people that don't have like the trading or investment knowledge, I think so this is a very great educational tool. And you know, we do a lot of videos and we hopefully mentor them. And then we really have the wealth app where it's people deposit in the local currencies, they buy cryptos, trade cryptos, they invest in different products, but really try again with data, with videos, with insights to help them to become better investors. And I think so from our community perspective, it's a very different breed than I would say most regular fintechs, because we're born out of a crowdfunding, right? An ICO where everyone has our tokens, we have 70,000 people, and they vote a lot. And this year, there wasn't been so much voting because we were able, essentially, doing voting on blockchain is not as easy as we think. And we weren't able to essentially develop this in the app. So we had a very good year for launching these new products and people were very happy. At the same time, we didn't have so many referendums. So next year, we'll have this new governance roles where people will be able to vote, send initiatives, vote on these initiatives, and be able to control a bit the roadmap. And everyone is very excited about that because I think so. A thing at Swissborg is that we really want to make sure that we build stuff that people want, but really want, because they paid for it almost in advance. Because that's a bit what you do in an ICO. We don't do any more ICOs, but we have that mentality is that we always want to make sure that we're building basically on who has already invested in that program. And I would say maybe the other thing which I've seen so far in the fintech space is that there's two breeds if we're talking about B2C. So there's the B2C guys that essentially are more focused on user acquisition, amazing at marketing, and essentially try to find the best solutions in the B2B side. And they don't develop the technology essentially. And the good thing with these guys is that whenever they start, they grow fast because they use different services. And then there's the other ones, which are more tech fin. So I would say more what we're doing to some extent, which is that you're more driven by building technology and products. And that has something different. And I'm not saying one is better than the other. What I'm just saying is that we went from the other side because in blockchain, it's not like fintech. There was not so many good solutions on the shelves. And the good thing is that whenever we vertically build new products, which takes a very big amount of time, but then when we arrive to that stage, we could then build a lot of products horizontally. So each time we're adding a new stage, then we are like, okay, cool. Now we could build a lot of new horizontal products, which is really good. And whereas when you take something that's not yours, well, it's far harder than to customize and build horizontally. It's easier to build vertically because you just bring in new services, but then horizontally, you're probably going to be confined within what's the parameters of the solution that's provided for you. So That was maybe the two different breeds that we have. And thankfully, we take a lot of time with the community to decide what are we going to bring vertically. And when we're okay with that, then horizontally, it doesn't really matter because we're like, okay, well, you know, would you just add that? It's like, you know, 4 or 5 days of coding and it's done. And that's where we make sure not to make any mistakes. It's building those new products vertically. Horizontally doesn't matter because, again, it's not so much work.
Well, and however, I mean, as we start moving into 2021, from a fintech perspective, what do you see as some of the biggest challenges facing us going forward?
I think one challenge is the potential deflation of the technology hype and fintech hype. I'm a strong long-term believer in both fintech and technology, but I think there has been so much excitement about it and so much investments in it over the last 5 years, and the stock market are back at record highs, that it will take very few negative surprises in the economy broadly or in tech and fintech space in particular for that potential bubble to collapse. And I think that's probably the biggest challenge, is living up to the shareholders and investors increasing and accelerating expectations. And if that happens, like it did in 2001, there'll be a massive drought in terms of access to capital in the fintech and tech fin space. And that's, from my perspective, the biggest challenge that we'll face. The other challenge, of course, is regulations, which keep getting more intense, especially in the banking space. But that's part of the game. And I believe that the ones who are best at rapidly adapting to those regulations will actually be the winners in the future.
Can I bounce on that? I'm very interested in that because that's a conversation that I have with our co-founder all the time. And we all have our own version of that. I do agree with the fact that, you know, valuations are very high tech. You know, some PE's stocks are just like, you know, out of the roof. But don't you think that, you know, there was so much hype on first commodities, then, you know, eventually to financials. And now that shift has gone into tech, right? For the last 10, 20 years, whatever you want to call it. But you're seeing, like, not all the companies, but you're definitely seeing, you know, democratization of so many things from so many countries. And there are a lot of users. Not all these platforms are making a lot of money, but they are being used. And the other side is like, where else there's money to be made? You know, it's not like whether you're going to make money with governmental bonds or. So where I see is like, yeah, it looks like this is like one of the last play. It's the safest, riskiest at the same time, but it looked like it's the safest as well, right?
I agree with you. I support that thesis that technology and fintech are actually good investments. But a lot of these companies, especially the younger and fast-growing companies, have yet to establish profitable business models. They have already spent a lot of investor money. And the problem is that a lot of the growth that's happening in the tech space is extremely expensive. And I suspect that a lot of very highly valued and fast-growing tech and fintech companies have a customer acquisition cost that's actually higher than their customer lifetime value, and they're able to hide it. And when investors realize that the future might not be as rosy as they're currently believing, there is the risk of a backlash. And I think that will affect everyone that needs access to the capital or are listed in the stock market. So it's just a natural cycle of the market.
I 100% back you, but again, to challenge you there, and I do agree with what you're saying, but what I'm seeing on the other side is that, again, all these companies that are not purely relied on other services, they're able to build their own stack to some extent. Then when you add a new product vertically, you could then grow a lot horizontally. And I know Amazon is the easy example, but it's still one, right? They were able to create this ebook shop. I mean, people buy different books on their shop, but then after they had great tech, so they're able to offer more and more different types of products. And, you know, and then they start building vertically again, you know, other different services. And I believe not everyone will be able to do that. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that if you do have the right agility mindset and technology, then you could potentially, even if you're not,
if your customer acquisition is high and LTV is not as good as customer acquisition, which happens for a lot of fintechs, then potentially maybe if they're selling a credit card, this fintech company, maybe they'll be able to add, I don't know, let's say lending, right? And then something else with it. And that could then increase LTV and still have the same customer acquisition, or even potentially lower it down if they start creating like new products that are really cool, that have their own organic growth. And of course, many won't do that, but I still believe some will have maybe the chance of going through those cycles as well. Yeah,
I fully agree with you. And I think Amazon is an illustrative example, right? Because they did actually spend, I think it was about 20 years of growing before they started showing profits. And they almost went bust in 2001. And they were just lucky that they were able to take up some big loans before the bubble burst back then. That's the reason they survived. So I'm just concerned that there might be a similar collapse from an investor point of view.
Of course.
In 2021 or 2022. And the good thing about such a collapse is that it clears out all the companies that are not really growing profitably or not really long-term viable. But I'm afraid it can kill a lot of companies that are actually very promising and have a great potential, but simply dies because of lack of access to funding.
There's some really interesting points there. I mean, maybe Jonas into the conversation and look at, you mentioned Amazon already, and just bringing that sort of view into the conversation and figuring out and getting your view as to what the role of big tech could play in fintech going forward in 2021. I know, you know, Facebook's on the cusp of launching some new products into the market very soon. Yeah, get your insights into that.
Yeah, I think I would continue on the path I was talking about before about mega apps or sometimes referred to super apps. Basically, platform apps developed by one company or in collaboration with another company. And on that platform, that app, they offer a various amount of services, but it's still under one brand. And I mean, we have the most obvious example when it comes to WeChat in China, which is almost like becoming their own infrastructure. It's far from a messaging platform, it's something else. So those kind of super apps is probably what every big tech in the world is looking at right now. How can Facebook become this super app? And we see this with Facebook Marketplace. And of course, they're looking into payments and probably banking and autonomous cars. And I don't know everything that they're doing. Same thing for the other big techs. When it comes to fintech, I think that big tech will try to come into fintech. But I also, as I said before, the fintech or the financial services sector, banks, for example. Banks are also looking towards the other way. Like, can we become an app store? Can we have various of services under our umbrella? We have the brand that's one of the most trusted brands in this world, so to speak. I mean, people are trusting their money with their banks. How can we build on that? And they have for several years, they have realized that we are not the ones who are going to build innovation, but if we can build this platform. And I actually think that this is quite explicitly said by, for example, ING in the Netherlands, that they will become the platform and allow not just fintech, but other apps to be on that platform. That is really what I see, that the big tech is coming into banking and fintech, but also banking and fintech going into like more services, more offering for their customers.
And Cyrus, from a crypto perspective, I mean, again, from a good to get your view on the entrance of big tech into that world, because obviously we know Facebook is thereabouts. How do you think that's going to play out in the coming year, in the coming years?
Yeah, I think so. I really want to back what Jonas was just saying. There's going to be two breeds again. There's going to be the fintech guys and there's going to be the tech fin guys. The tech fin guys are in some way, how to say it, very advantaged and very dangerous, as we know, because they know how to build sticky, scalable products and platforms, where the others usually don't necessarily. They got into early or they're very good at marketing, but they were never product focused or never tech focused for most of them. And we see this as well with the biggest kings of fintech. I mean, PayPal, right, is one of probably the best company fintech ever existed with American Express. But now that they integrated crypto, they're not integrating crypto. So they're actually our partners, Paxos, to take care of their crypto space. And that's going to be happening with most of all the big guys in fintech, I would presume, and Revolut, the same thing. You know, they're not taking care of the crypto part. It's another company. So you see the old fintech guys or the banks, they're probably going to go through different service providers, B2B. And I think so it makes sense for them because it's new territory. However, the guys like Facebook, I mean, Libra Foundation, if you guys could look at the quality of the blockchain developers that they built Calibra, the wallet system, and their whole proof of stake network blockchain, it's amazing. It's the best guys in the world who got on that. And what's going to happen is that then the other guys from Facebook, they're going to build on top, and they're just going to create the best products. And as we see with WeChat, then they could take over markets, countries, and the world. And for the good or for the bad, we're going to see a definitely a very interesting race. We're supporters of Libra. We think it's a great initiative. Hope that could be a bit more decentralized with time, because if it's only controlled by a few players, this might be dangerous. But as the association is welcoming more and more members in it, I think so that's something that's good. And that has this blockchain consensus model, which is, I think, so very important in terms of governance. And yeah, we're really looking forward to partner up more and more with these different firms. And they're all doing it. Same with Visa, right? Visa has today created a fund with other investors that are about to support USDC, which are our partners. It's essentially US dollar that is tokenized on Ethereum. That's done by Circle. It's a group with Coinbase and other different investors. And Visa, again, now they're saying that there's going to be the big war now is stable coins in crypto, right? There's the wealth management investment part that's still, you know, untouched. It's a huge race, a big battle. And, you know, central banks are coming in. The digital yuan has just been launched as a proof of case in Shenzhen. You know, Lagarde, Christine Lagarde, ECB president, she's talking about digital euro. And it's extremely fascinating and it's moving faster and faster. It's not about talking now, it's about building, and very soon about launching. Most probably a lot of initiatives will be launched in Q1, Q2 of 2021. So buckle up, guys. It's a fun time.
Yeah, some really interesting insights there, mate. And how about, I mean, just as we move forward and we start looking at the new year, maybe, you know, some blue sky thinking and some, you know, insights from yourself around some cool new fintech products that you might be excited about.
I'm particularly excited about the space that we're trying to go into now, which is business payments, and in particular B2B checkout, because that's, from my perspective, a travesty how poorly that is working for especially small and medium-sized businesses when they do purchasing, whether it's office equipment or travels or online ad campaigns. They have to go through a pretty painful process with typically using your own personal debit or credit card to make the purchase, save the receipt, and then go through a very cumbersome reimbursement process. And we and a lot of others are working very hard to make that a thing of the past, basically, that you can do safe and digital purchases very simply on behalf of a business, whether it's in a restaurant or online store or whatever, and remove that big pain and friction once and for all. And that to me is going to be most exciting thing in 2021, to see who cracks that problem first and how fast the pain can go away.
Jonas, from yourself, I know you guys have gone through a period of quite exciting growth and, you know, forming new partnerships. So what are you looking forward to from a product perspective next year?
I think I'm a bit into the same area of payments, and I will also use three letters, but not B2B, but RTP, request to pay. I think that is really a thing that we will see, sorry to have the expression, but a shitload of news about request to pay during 2021. It's really a new format for the card companies, the classic one, Visa and MasterCard, etc. But it's also a whole new thing for both the merchants and the retail banks. So request to pay is basically that instead of consumer paying the bank on a certain date, expiration date, the merchant is pushing a request to pay to the consumer on any day. Then you as a consumer give approval for a transaction up to this amount. And then based on that consent, the merchant can then take money. And I think this is really changing the whole business model for not just merchants, but also banks and the Visa and other payments companies of the world. So it's far beyond cards. Cards are probably a bit of a legacy. And it's also very interesting how the consumers will react to this. And this is quite recently launched here in Sweden to consumer, like peer-to-peer payments that you can request to pay. So that is what I'm looking forward to see a lot of it in 2021. And of course, we are on top of this as well, because what does that mean for subscriptions, recurring payments? And there we have some really interesting products coming up. So that makes me very excited.
Cool. It sounds extremely interesting and exciting, Jonas. And Cyrus, as we look to the future, I want to give you a chance to, you know, open your thoughts. I mean, where do you think the industry is going in the next 2, 3, 4 years? What do you think is going to be the, I don't want to say the pinnacle, but the mountain we need to climb together over the next few years?
Are we talking
I can give it a stab at first. Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Sorry. I think three things that I've been seeing when I scan through the strategic initiatives from the banks. It's, of course, about improving the digital experience still. That is top focus for almost every bank right now. And that we see probably from a threat from neobanks, etc. Also big tech that we talked about here. And I like the expression techfin. That was a new one. Second one, I think it's about reducing operational cost by digitalizing a lot of these back office maintenance processes that the bank have. And then third one would be to reshape all the physical branches to digital sales. And that is just like, it's very hard to see how that will play out. For example, in the Nordics, we are very digital already. In many of the countries, you can't even become a customer without visiting a physical branch. And that will be changed for sure.
Oh, some great insight there. And, you know, Cyrus, just to bring you into the conversation, what can you see the future, you know, future vision holding for the fintech industry as a whole, and also, you know, more specifically in the crypto space?
Yeah, I think so. One of Jonas, I mean, really has made the point there, which is it's all about user experience. It's not about building products in, you know, acquisition of customers or users. It's really about providing a new experience. And the tech world has been doing this extremely well. Social media platforms have been kicking it with very, very addictive ways to sticking users, even on the flip side, it's almost too dangerous there. But I think that's the future of fintech, is how to provide a great experience. And the first part is the onboarding. And how could that be solved? Well, now there's all these digital, you know, new marketplaces where you could onboard, do your know your customer quickly. But I think so going forward is more importantly, is you need to have such like a digital ID. And imagine the space where yourself, Richard, you know, you have two accounts at Revolut, two accounts at another bank. And how will you pass on from banks to banks using different services without needing to like spend, you know, an hour of compliance questions for you? And I think so that might be somewhere where banks or fintechs could work together and say like, okay, we have one centralized platform, which is doing KYC for this person. And then basically on the permission of this user, he could then send it to different banks, different platforms. And therefore that could really reduce the pain. That's the one big part. I think so the second part is, I mean, the financial models, I know we're getting faster payment, instant payment, and it's getting better and better and better, but nevertheless, it's all centralized. And with centralized technology, it's complicated. It's complicated to have trusts. It's complicated for multiple different reasons. And I think so, you know, the blockchain has been so far a great place where we're all connected through the same idea of, you know, bringing Bitcoin, Ethereum, Swissborg token, whatever is your call, but to work together. And I think so that that collaboration software that gives trust and transparency is definitely the one that will provide, again, a better investment experience, a better onboarding experience, better payment experience. And that's definitely something that happened for most players. And that's why we're there.
Cool. And guys, listen, it's been an absolutely fascinating discussion. Some really great insights across the board. But as we look to wrap up the show, I'm going to ask you each one question. And that question is, what do you wish for Christmas in 2021? Or maybe we can, Jonas, if you can take that up and Helva can come in a second.
Yeah, sure. I think travels, to be short, travels. I think this year have really realized for a lot of people that physical space affect people. There is some kind of magic when you move from one room to another room. You change the environment. It's, of course, this analogy of like, are you at home working or are you at work being home, so to speak? It's very hard to differentiate your home from your home office. And that's something that all of us have experienced during 2020. That also comes to travels. There is something special with coming to another culture and to another country, eating another kind of food, etc. And I think it's all about what are you optimizing for. So far, perhaps it's been, oh, it's nice to work from home. And now perhaps we are not optimizing for what is nice, but we are optimizing for something else. And I would be optimizing for the experience, I think. And then, of course, side note, I want a subscription of travels, of course. I want to manage that subscription in my bank. But that's another thing.
Cool. And Helva, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I was on mute.
What's your wish for Christmas and what's your wish for 2021?
So I think my wishes are continued happy and optimistic investors, that the Corona vaccination program is working well during the first quarter of 2021, so we can start getting back to normal life again, including travels. I agree with you on this there.
And Cyrus, what about yourself?
As the other gents already got the great philosophical Christmas wishes, I'll go for the Scrooge more, or the Uncle Scrooge part. I hope that Bitcoin gets to 30,000, Swissborg token gets to 20 cents. Those are my two Christmas presents.
Oh, great. Great roundup. And listen, guys, it's been absolutely fascinating to listen to your insights. And it's been very interesting to get your views on how you see the fintech industry moving forward into 2021 and beyond. So thanks so much for being on the show and looking forward to watching your companies rise and grow next year.
Thank you.